This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 168, It's Not a Lie, If You Believe It. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlyn Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including which Doctor fans would most trust, and the 20th anniversary of Voyager, as we remember the premiere of Caretaker. Then in the feature, we're joined by Matthew Rushing to discuss the Voyager episode, Live Fast and Prosper. So let's step into The Ready Room. Hello, Char. It's great to have you back here with me on The Ready Room for the first episode recorded in about 5 weeks because of my schedule. I'm glad we're finally here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It is fantastic to be doing The Ready Room with you in 2015, back after, as you said, an absence. And hopefully this is just the first of a wonderful year of episodes for The Ready Room.
I certainly hope so. I am trying to get back on a regular schedule. Actually, we were trying to get back on a regular schedule after the last episode, but then I got sick. And of course, yes, there's my schedule, which I explained in the previous episode. So this is actually our third attempt to record this episode, and I'm glad that we're doing it now.
Yes, it is, actually. We've rescheduled it a couple of times. Three's a charm, right?
That is right. That is right.
We're going to do it this time. It's going to happen.
So we're going to kick off our news here by talking about Voyager, because this is a Voyager episode. And just 2 days ago, well, actually for you in the States, it's just yesterday as we're recording this, marked the 20th anniversary of the premiere of Voyager and Caretaker. Mm-hmm. Now, I've told the story, I know, on the show at least once about how I saw Caretaker for the first time, getting the videotape from my dad after my friends and I in university had driven to Birmingham to see Generations, because there was no UPN affiliate in Tuscaloosa, so there's no way we could watch Caretaker without getting the videotape. I'm not sure, though, if I've ever really heard your story of the first time you saw Caretaker, so what are your memories of that?
My memories are, and I've actually told this story several times in the last couple of days,
The Journey?
As a matter of fact, I believe I did talk about it on To the Journey, maybe more than once at this point, okay, but I've also talked about it in the Babel Conference and other friends. And so to put it on record here, here's what happened with my story with Voyager. My family was having a get-together the day that Voyager premiered, and so I remember my dad and I very deliberately ignoring the family, the rest of the family, at my grandparents' house because we had to watch Voyager. We had to watch this thing as it kicked off. Never mind the fact that I was recording it on the VHS tape at the same time, and we could have watched it later, but no.
It's not the same, you know. It's like a sporting event. You've got to watch it live.
That's right. And so, fortunately, people were more or less understanding. They just like, oh, okay, the nerds got to do their thing. Leave them alone. And we were downstairs watching Caretaker, and we were so excited.
Were you cheering? So they thought maybe you were actually watching a football game?
Oh, no. There was no way that was happening. Everybody knew. We were watching Star Trek, those freaking nerds. That was before geek chic was really a thing. And okay. So, oh, they're watching Star Trek. Ew, stay away. So actually, it was really helpful for our privacy to really engross ourselves in Caretaker. And then people left us alone.
That's good. All right. Well, for me, I've watched all, from TNG forward, I watched all of Star Trek in first run. So going into Voyager, there was all this excitement. I remember listening on the radio to them talking about the creation of Voyager when it was just a rumor, and then when it was actually in production and all the drama about Bjold leaving the set.
Oh, I remember too.
And all of this. So when it finally aired, you know, there was all this pent up excitement and interest in me, you know, wondering like, what am I going to see? For you, had you been watching all the episodes in first run up to this point as well? Did you follow news?
I followed the news, definitely. But as far as episodes, I didn't start watching TNG as the episodes aired until probably about the fifth season, at least steadily. Okay. I always caught it here and there, and then I watched old reruns of the original series way before that. And I even remember watching a little bit of Encounter at Farpoint with my dad when it aired, but I didn't really, really, really become a fan till around the 25th anniversary.
Okay, so that explains 91. Those photos I've seen of you where you have the Encounter at Farpoint Troy hairstyle going.
Yes, there actually was a point in my life where I did have a perm, but I wasn't wearing the scan.
Well, does everyone have to have a perm at some point in their life, especially if you grew up in the 80s?
Well, I think it was a requirement if you lived in the 80s to have a perm.
Yeah, that and gull wings, right? You had to have your hair parted down the middle and you had to have the gull wings going, like a flock of seagulls.
I thought that was more of a 70s thing. See, for me, it was about the big bangs.
Okay.
So that was like the late 80s, early 90s thing.
I had an idea now for a TV show, The Big Bangs Theory.
And it's a show. A throwback 80s show?
Well, yeah, and it's a show about hairdressers and yeah.
Oh, man, they could have a whole season on Janeway's hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, the heyday they could have with that. Okay, CBS, make it happen.
So what were your thoughts when you saw Caretaker?
I remember being so incredibly excited. I thought, this is a fantastic pilot. They did a wonderful job of establishing all these characters. And I fell in love with the characters right away. Even though I'd read descriptions, like TV Guide did a preview and there was all sorts of stuff out there. Star Trek Communicator magazine, I'm sure, had tons of stuff and information that was coming out. And I just remember being very excited. Yes, for a woman captain, because it was a first-time thing, and hooray for that. But then I just really loved these characters, and I thought they had a great story. And I thought, this series has so much promise, and it's going to be the best Trek series yet. And if only it had lived up to that potential. If only it could have been.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, I know you're a cat person. You were excited about a female captain. Were you disappointed that she had a dog? Did you wish that she was asking Mark to let the cat in and out?
Oh, no, I didn't care so much about that. That was okay. I mean, Data had Spot. And so with TNG just ending and then Generations coming out where Spot has a nice cameo. Mm-hmm. It was okay. We don't need... It was at a point where the internet had not been taken over by cats.
Oh, true.
Because the internet was so new, and so it hadn't occurred to me that everything should be cat-related at that point. Nowadays, if it wasn't a cat, I would be just really sad.
Plus, you had Neelix. He's a little bit cat-like, right?
Yeah, with the makeup. Yeah, he kind of looks like a cat in a way, or I don't know. He does get called a rodent. Which cats hunt. So he's just a weird mixture of stuff.
Oh, what if Mares had been stationed on Voyager, or you know, a descendant of Mares, and then Neelix came aboard?
Oh my.
Opens up all
kinds of possibilities. There was no Kes. Those two would have hooked up.
Well, she would have been chasing him around the ship at least, right?
Could you imagine their offspring?
Oh, I don't want to imagine.
That poor, poor thing. The way it has hair in so many places.
I'm imagining Neelix and Kes's offspring where they look a lot like Neelix, but they have Kes's hair.
Oh, God.
Season one hair.
Oh. The most horrible wigs ever. are in Voyager season one. Holy, oof.
I think in this on the lot, they've got a big box that's labeled season one wigs. And for all the different series, they pull out these season one wigs. And that's why the hair looks so bad in season one. You know, Troy's hair.
Is that what they
Kes's
do?
Kes's hair. T'Pol's hair was also terrible in season one.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up T'Pol.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really needed to stop getting stuff from the Roadkill Cafe and get some real stuff, which fortunately they did up their taste as the series went on. But some of those wigs, man, they were awful.
So speaking of cafes, one thing you get in cafes is coffee. And as StarTrek.com pointed out in Caretaker, it's the only time that we see Janeway drinking coffee with cream.
Yes, this is the one fact that I got out of that article on StarTrek.com, because I knew a lot of the stuff that it contains already. Like, Chakotay speaks the first line to kick off the series.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you watch it, you absorb that.
You kind of notice that thing, right?
Well, but this, being such a coffee fan, I should have noticed this one a long time ago, but I didn't realize it was the one and only time. The rest of the time, straight up black.
Well, but it makes sense, right? Because in Caretaker, they're in this new, cushy, state-of-the-art Federation starship. They've got a simple mission to go on, and then they're going to go and explore. You know, she's mm-hmm. a scientist. After this, they're lost on the other side of the galaxy. Now, wouldn't you switch to just straight black coffee after that?
As a matter of fact, this is what I do in my own life. When I am under stress, I will take coffee black and drink it nonstop. Just like Captain Janeway, and it's not a habit that I saw her do and decided to pick it up. No, this is actually just a habit I formed way back in the days when I was working at a coffee shop. I had to be up really early in the morning, mm-hmm. and I would make a pot of coffee, one for myself, and then the rest were for the customers. By the time I opened up for business at 6 a.m, I'd already had, you know, a whole pot of coffee just so I could get through my day. I remember this just because it was finals week one year, and it was one of the most stressful times of my life. Coffee black got me through.
Well, I cannot do coffee black myself, but I can understand why Janeway switched to it, and I can certainly understand why you were guzzling it back in the day.
It's an acquired taste, but it gets the job done. You learn to live with it.
Well, so I guess for both of us, impressions of Caretaker when it first aired was really good start to a series, right? Very interesting, mm-hmm. good setup. I remember thinking at the time that it was the most polished pilot episode. Not that there was a lot of competition, because Encounter at Farpoint, obviously, was not at the top of its game in terms of writing or acting. And of course, production-wise, you have to remember that it was made in the late 80s, and the technology was quite different at the time.
Right.
But Emissary,
also, production wasn't as streamlined.
Yeah, but Emissary is a really good pilot, which I've come to appreciate more and more over the years. And Caretaker held, for me, the position of the best produced pilot until Broken Bow came out, which I think is actually the best produced pilot.
Okay, so that's at your top.
Well, Emissary is tops for me in terms of the story and how it sets up the characters. But
Broken Bow
is the top for me in terms of just being polished and the production value of it and everything. So,
okay.
But those are my memories of Caretaker and being very excited about it and continuing to be excited about Voyager for a long time. And I think, you know, in first run for me with Voyager all the way through to the end of the series, I really enjoyed it for the most part. And it's in later years where I've kind of, after you watch it enough and then you start to think, you know, boy, they could have done this, they could have done that with it. But going mm-hmm. back and just thinking about, you know, remembering the 20th anniversary, remembering the premiere, it was just such an exciting time in Star Trek.
Oh, it really was. So many things were happening, and Voyager was just one of the ingredients of all that excitement.
That's what's really amazing. And of course, you're not speaking of Platypus Man, which also premiered on UPN at the same time.
You know, I'm not surprised that was a thing on UPN.
It's too bad that show did not last, because, you know, I could see Neelix doing a cameo on Platypus Man.
That sounds very likely. I have no idea exactly what happened on Platypus Man. I could guess.
If I remember,
but Neelix does seem like a good fit.
A single guy, you know, living in his bachelor pad, and it was a sitcom. Yeah.
Well, that sounds pretty par for the course for failed UPN shows.
Doesn't it?
Of the many in that graveyard. Oh, boy.
All right. Well, let's go on to the other thing we're going to talk about here in the news segment today. And this is another StarTrek.com poll, which we like to discuss because I like to hear everyone's thoughts on these topics and these questions that they asked.
And so goofy and
this
fun.
One is about which doctor you'd trust as your own. And they had more than 17,000 votes. And tell us what the results were.
Well, I'm happy to report that coming in at first place with 37% of the votes is the Doctor, our wonderful EMH from the Starship Voyager.
Yep.
Coming in second with 23% was Dr. Crusher. What? Sorry, TNG. 20% of the vote went to Bones, 14% went to Dr. Bashir, and somehow Dr. Phlox only got 6% of the votes, which, I'm sorry, that kind of surprises me a little bit. How about you?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I think it's probably that people would prefer not to be treated with leeches or, you know, dissolved toenail clippings that you have to drink or things like that. Although I do think that Phlox is a very, very capable doctor. I would say,
yes,
as a physician, probably far more capable than Beverly Crusher. Because...
you're going to die if you are in Dr. Crusher's care.
Not only that, but I mean, let's be honest. When you watch Dr. Crusher come up with real medical solutions on the show, she very much relies on the technology to do everything, whereas Phlox is really relying, and Bones as well, Bones and Phlox really relying on understanding how to use the natural things that they have available to them, or at least derivatives of natural things, and coming up with solutions instead of just pressing buttons.
Right, yeah. I would say that both of those guys are just really good problem solvers and skilled physicians.
Yeah.
Actually, I voted in this poll. I voted for Dr. Phlox.
Did you?
Yes. I might be grossed out by the leeches and all that, but the dude knows what he is doing. He will do everything he possibly can to save your life, even if it means cloning you or using leeches or whatever it is in that cage just a few feet away. He's going to find a way to make it happen.
He is. And he has
dude's got skills.
And he has a good bedside manner as well.
That too.
He's friendly.
And he's got a great smile.
He's got a big smile.
Yeah, if I were stuck in sickbay with an illness, there is nobody that I would like to talk to more than Dr. Phlox.
Now, the doctor at 37%, I completely understand how he comes in first, because if you want someone who's going to know how to save your life, then you want someone who is programmed with the knowledge of all the other doctors.
Right. So, yeah, this one is, in a way, a no-brainer.
Yeah.
He might have not the greatest bedside manner, especially in those earlier years, but he does have some pretty comprehensive knowledge, and he's going to be accurate because he's a hologram. No human error.
Absolutely. Of course, there was an episode called Human Error.
True. Lest we forget.
I'm glad they did not program him to make common medical mistakes, you know, to be very authentic.
Yeah, well, he wasn't striving to be human like Data was, or even Seven.
Yeah, that's true.
He embraced his hologram heritage.
Now, with Crusher at second, with 23%, this is a case where, again, I think people are voting because they like the character, not so much because they think that she would be the best doctor for them, because I like Beverly as a character, and I like Gates McFadden. But if I were going to choose a physician from the next generation who's probably going to be able to solve the problem and save my life, I would probably ask to be treated by the character that I don't actually like, which is Dr. Pulaski.
You could always go for Nurse Ogawa.
Well,
just head in there when Dr. Crusher's off duty.
I stroll in.
Yeah, it's after hours. Nurse Ogawa's got a couple of hours left on her shift. She's just kind of waiting out the clock. Go in there when things aren't very busy. And that way, you get the best of both worlds there. You get decent bedside manner and good treatment.
Yeah, she'd be very friendly, I'm quite sure.
Yeah.
Now, Bashir is another person who I think is a good problem solver. Also knows how to use the technology as well. And I wouldn't mind being treated by someone who is actually a genius, who is, you know, genetically enhanced to be able to solve these problems.
Yeah, that's not an entirely bad thing. But if I'm being treated by season one Bashir, I know he's going to try and put the moves on me and ask me out on a date.
Yeah, see, that's and where, as a male patient, that's just annoying. I don't have to worry about that from Bashir.
That's true. But he might challenge you to, I don't know, like a racquetball match or something.
Maybe, or darts, you know. And
yeah, darts. And then he'll have to prove his prowess on you and then just beat you to shreds. I'm not sure how much fun that is.
Well, it depends, you know. I mean, if it's before the cat's out of the bag about his genetic enhancement, he'll let me win, you know, not to give anything away. But if it's later, then he's definitely going to show off, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess it just depends on which era of Julian Bashir.
Especially if Ezri's in the bar, you know, because he's got to...
Oh, well, then he's distracted.
Yeah, but he's got to show off a little bit, too.
So that could kind of go either way. He might be distracted, which might work in your favor if you're really good at darts, but at the same time, he can focus and then, well, then you're screwed.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. So this poll, I think, the results here I think are pretty understanding. And with Phlox being at 6%, again, any Enterprise character is generally going to end up the bottom of these polls just because not enough fans have actually taken the time to seriously watch Enterprise, and so they don't know the characters very well in the first place.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there are fans that do, but the majority of the fan base, I think they know the Enterprise characters far less than they know the characters from any of the other series.
It's true. I just finally got through Enterprise and binged on it myself. Some episodes for the very first time. To those of you out there who haven't watched it, take the time. Watch it. Give it a chance. It is worth it. But don't watch the very last episode, the one that shall not be named. It will ruin everything for you.
Or watch it, but just don't think of it as the last episode of Enterprise. Think of it as this kind of Star Trek TV special.
Well, yeah, the Valentine to the fans, which is complete BS. Maybe it's just a really weird pipe dream. It's something Commander Riker was just dreaming about.
Maybe.
That's how I'm going to think of it, because it just, ugh. Now I understand the hatred. I really do. I was really bitter after watching that, especially when I had just watched Terra Prime, not that much earlier in the day.
It ends.
What a perfect ending, and then you have to go do that?
Well, no, I won't say that Terra Prime and Demons is a perfect ending, but it's the perfect setup for more stories that are really interesting.
Oh, certainly, but if you have to leave off, you can leave off there because it's a great bookend with Trip and T'Pol, who could barely even look each other in the eye,
that's
and they wouldn't even shake hands in the beginning, and then all of a sudden, now there's this really solid bond.
That's true. All right, there's a little bonus Enterprise discussion there at the end of the news.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to get into a rant.
No, it's fine. Well, you get me talking about Enterprise, and we'll talk forever, but we better stop that because it's time to jump into the feature and bring in Matthew so that we can talk about Live Fast and Prosper. Making your way home across the Delta Quadrant is difficult enough, so you don't need people impersonating you and selling Federation memberships and just giving you a bad name. But that's what happens in the episode Live Fast and Prosper, a fun episode in which Voyager has to clean up a mess that, I actually blame it all on Neelix. I think it's Neelix's fault, because Neelix's loose lips sinks ships as he gives away too much information. to someone who's trying to help orphans. Well, today we're going to talk about this episode, and to help us do that, we're joined by Mr. Matthew Rushing, who has not only brought his authentic Janeway steel mug today, but also his authentic Janeway wig.
Well, Chris,
looks good.
I had to have the wig. I mean, there's just I just didn't feel right not being in the full Janeway mode. And just kind of the fact that the doctor was in drag in this episode, I felt like I should support him as well. So,
right, the dress right. looks really good.
Well, thank you.
Spaghetti strap suit. You.
Oh, I appreciate that. I worked really hard on this, and
I can tell you've been working out.
Thank you. Well, and the coolest thing, Chris, is I just realized "Live Fast and Prosper." Was this the first episode of Trek that's been directed by Jeremy Lin?
I guess so.
Okay, I just didn't know if this one was considered part of the Fast and the Furious or that franchise, because it yeah.
Yeah, you're thinking about the original script for this episode, The Fast and Furious.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, oh goodness, I guess I should have watched the episode instead of just reading the script.
It was later renamed Drive for season 7.
Okay,
where we get NASCAR in space.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
This just shows you how long it's been since I've watched some Voyager, right?
You got to get on it, man. It's the 20th anniversary.
This is true.
Yeah, come on and celebrate.
No, this episode was in fact directed by the great LeVar Burton. But let's talk about the actual episode itself. And Char, I'm going to ask you to do the synopsis, because I love to have, when we have hosts from our dedicated series shows on, I love to have them do the synopsis.
Okay. Well, this is an episode where we find out that there is a group of people who are posing as the Voyager crew because they have taken information from Voyager. Thanks to Neelix and Tom Paris, as you mentioned earlier, stole the database and tried to replicate as much of Voyager as possible so that they could essentially, get whatever the heck that they want and make really shady deals and give Voyager a very horrible rap. The real Voyager gets word of this and, as you did mention earlier, once again, has to clean up the mess, fix what has transpired here, and make things right. That's what happens.
Yeah. And like I said, I really blame it on Neelix, because he's the one who's actually sitting down feeding all the information about, well, Janeway's from Indiana. It's on Earth. It's 30,000 light years from here. We're all alone. We're from the Federation.
Well, hearkening back to our Enterprise discussion for just one more moment, it's sort of like when Captain Archer's like, yeah, we're from Earth and we're located right here. Here's our maps.
That's right.
And you shouldn't really do that to the snake oil salesman of the, you know, Delta Quadrant. It's just not really the best idea.
No.
But I guess, you know, Neelix is just too trusting. He never occurred to him that maybe these people were phony.
Well, orphans, down, man.
In a dark cave somewhere.
Orphans.
You encounter two people raising money to help orphans.
Well,
poor orphans.
This is the exact thing that, you know, Harry Kim almost gets taken by Quark at the very first episode the series. And at least they actually deal with it in the episode, the fact that Neelix and Tom Paris are the ones who get taken for a ride. And of any of the characters of Voyager, you would think these guys wouldn't be so gullible and stupid. And yet, here they are being the ones, you know, just being fleeced like crazy. And,
you know, it's interesting that you say that, because my first thought is that I think Neelix would be that gullible and stupid. But on the other hand, when we meet Neelix in Caretaker, here's a guy who really is on his own, and he would really need to be cautious and be careful and really know who he's dealing with. And so you would think that he would be less open and naive than he turns out to be throughout the series.
Yeah, honestly, I think a pre-Caretaker Neelix would have teamed up with these guys so he could get even more riches and fields of debris.
Maybe so.
I do think,
especially if they had water.
One thing this episode does right is I do think that maybe Neelix and Tommy are former scoundrels, have gotten soft. The Starfleet mm-hmm. way of life has really made them open and trustworthy and honest. So honest that they can't even consider that maybe other people aren't as honest as they are. So I love the fact that they acknowledge that, ooh, we've lost our edge, haven't we? Orphans, it's the oldest trick in the book.
Well, and it's very much the way that, you know, Quark loses his edge in some ways with DS9, where he becomes so much softer. And the Federation has this ability to just kind of, I don't know, is it somewhat of a danger to see how much the Federation kind of can kind of dull some senses that are very important to the survival of people? And
it's like root beer.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was an interesting thing because I was thinking to myself, you know, being in the Delta Quadrant for so long, I kind of would have thought that their senses for this kind of thing would be heightened, you know, because they're so used mm-hmm. to meeting people that they have to be wary of at the beginning. And yet we see these two characters. I see what they're trying to do with the character growth, but at the same time, it kind of doesn't make sense for even where they are and where they have been for the last, you know, 6 years so far, for them to be so trusting, because they've been in this place where you're always meeting new people, and your first inclination should be, we need to be cautious and careful. And I think, I don't know, that whole issue was very interesting to see play out in this episode, because on one side I see what they're doing, and on the other side I still couldn't really make sense of.
Maybe they're just, you know, after fighting the Borg and the Hirogen and Species 8472, as Neelix reveals, they finally meet some people who seem like, okay, these are just nice people trying to help kids, and they just let their guard down. Maybe they want to let their guard down. Like, they need to exhale a little bit after all the danger.
Yeah, it's true. Voyager doesn't really have many friends throughout its journey on the Delta Quadrant. And so maybe this felt like a breath of fresh air. And I do think you make a good point, Matthew, that maybe they should have had their guard up a little more and shouldn't have been so initially so willful to trust. But at the same time, they probably do have a desire to make some allies and have some friends out here because, frankly, it's been so long. You need more of it. But had Voyager maybe been a different show and maybe gone through more things like, say, the Equinox had, you'd see a much more cautious approach. But instead, people call it, TNG light, they are going to be trustworthy because that is the Starfleet way.
Now, for the imposters themselves, first of all, I'm a little bit surprised that this had not happened before in the Delta Quadrant, that no one had tried to impersonate Starfleet and impersonate Voyager. But I love, from a design standpoint, I love how the uniforms are just kind of not quite right, how the comm badge is a little bit comically oversized.
It looks like bad cosplay.
It does.
That's what I was
going to
say. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's not the original because it's just a little bit off in all the right places. Right.
Yeah. It's a little bit off in all the right places. Little bit off.
See, Char, you don't podcast with Matthew as much as I do, so you haven't learned that you have to be careful, because if you give Matthew an opening to sing by throwing out a song title or something close, he will jump on it.
Yes, I should know this because I do listen to the Orb and Literary Treks, but shame on me.
Well, let's talk about the fake characters themselves for a little bit. As I'm watching, especially Tuvok, especially this guy Mobar, who is the fake Tuvok, I remember the line from Seinfeld when George Costanza says, "It's not a lie if you believe it." Because through everything that happens in this episode to them, he never breaks character. It's like it's in his head now that he is a logical Vulcan. He is Tuvok.
Dude, he is the best cosplayer ever because he's so buried himself in his part that we have no idea who this guy is outside of the impersonation of Tuvok.
Exactly.
He's the Christian Bale of the Delta Quadrant. Like, he's so method that he doesn't even break, you know, when they're on their own ship until, you know, whenever they're done with this con was when he would finally stop being Tuvok, you know?
I'm not sure, Matthew. I kind of have a feeling he was going to keep being Tuvok.
Maybe he's like, you know, We just did Galaxy Quest on the 602 Club, and there is that character who really models himself after Dr. Lazarus, you know, even after he knows that this guy isn't true. Like, he still holds these tenets of belief. Maybe the beliefs of the Vulcans have really touched this guy deep down in his soul, and he just wants to identify with him. Kind of like, you know, if somebody's like, I really want to believe what Klingons believe. I really want to be a Klingon, you know? So maybe he just, being Vulcan, fit.
Yeah. I bet he's got a candle fetish as
probably.
Well.
Yeah. Whew. Good luck finding those in the Delta Quadrant, though.
Well, they'll go to some planet and they'll offer the planet Federation membership in exchange for 20 tons of candles.
Yeah.
Now, how about Zar, the guy that plays the fake Chakotay? It's like Bizarro Superman when he comes in. It's just the if you think about Robert Beltran's Chakotay and then this guy here who's played by Francis Guinan. Ooh, Guinan. So, but just the difference in the shape of their head and then the big tattoo that's painted on.
Yeah, his is bigger.
And the way he delivers the lines. It's quite funny.
It is, and yet I find this version of Chakotay just as useless as the real one. Sorry, Suzanne.
It is true that even on the fake Voyager, this Chakotay gets very little to do and gets pushed around by the captain, you know?
It gets dismissed. Yeah, his thoughts get dismissed and he has to go back over to his
exactly,
corner.
You know, and she's not even the real captain. But he still can't get a word in edgewise. I feel bad for the guy.
Maybe this group as a whole, they are all just the best cosplayers out there. Game is over. They win.
It's like they watched all the security logs so that they could get their characters down pat, and they realized, I'm sorry, but you're playing the part of Chakotay, which means I never listen to you.
You're going to be my punching bag, and you're going to like it. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
We're going to make this authentic.
Poor guy. Yeah.
And yet they couldn't get the uniforms quite right, which I didn't understand. Because, I mean, they download the database, which should have all the specs down to the little millimeter.
Well, maybe...
Where did they go wrong with that when they had the characters down so well?
I think it's that they don't have a replicator. And so they're having to hand sew their costumes.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, that's, if you're not a real seamstress, you're probably not going to be great at getting all the dimensions just right, you know? When you can just replicate a uniform, it's pretty easy. But, I mean, have you ever tried to make your own cosplay, Char? I hear it's pretty tough.
Truth be told, I have not, and I am nowhere... in any way a seamstress. And so, okay, you make a very good point.
Now, from an actual storytelling point of view, if the uniforms had been spot on, I think the whole tone of the episode would have changed, because the episode, it's fun, it's kind of comical. I mean, it's serious what's going on. It could have serious repercussions for Voyager. But for you as the viewer... It's kind of a fun story. And if the uniforms were exactly right and they made the characters look not so much like cosplayers, but like actual aliens that have figured out how to really impersonate Voyager and misrepresent the Federation, I don't think the episode would be nearly as much fun. I like the baggy uniforms. I like the oversized com badges.
Well, and fake Janeway, I mean, let's not forget her. I mean, she really imbibes this role with the same amount of irrationality and unpredictability in her behavior as the real Janeway. I mean, I got to give it to this woman. True. She has committed to being the best damn fake captain ever.
Now, Matthew,
no comment.
Did you recognize Dalla?
Did I recognize
the actress?
Dalla? I didn't, but it's probably just because I wasn't looking hard enough. Who else has she played in Star Trek?
She was Kilana, the Vorta, in the ship on DS9.
Oh my gosh!
Caitlin Hopkins.
Wow, what different roles? Definitely looked sexier as a Vorta.
Well, I know that you have a thing for the Vorta ears, Matthew.
I just like... that's a whole nother show.
That's another. That's an orb. Vorta ears.
Vorta ears. There you go.
Topic for today's orb is Vorta ears.
That might have to be the orb after hours, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, orb after for the dark. Ferengi anthem.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that Vorta like Umox?
That is a good question.
Never thought about that before, but they've certainly got the lobes for it.
Yeah. Of all the other Star Trek races, I feel like they have the largest lobes comparatively to Ferengi. I'm surprised that, you know, that Quark really didn't try to figure that out on one of their trips to the Gamma Quadrant. So
seriously, missed opportunity.
That sounds like a great novella right there.
I think that's a fanfic you need to write, Matthew.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to pitch that to Margaret. That's going to be a next.
There you go. There you go.
That should be the next ebook. Heck yeah.
Vorta Love Slave number one. I think we've
got
a hit.
There you go. I'm telling you, it'll be a hit.
Now, as we were talking about on the other side of the room, there's one fake Voyager crew member that's missing. That's very important, especially if you're going to have fake Chakotay and fake Janeway together on a small ship.
Mm-hmm.
And who would that be, Char?
Well, of course. And Tristan is, I'm not sure if he's going to love this or hate this, but where's the fake monkey?
Right, exactly. Where is the fake monkey?
In a way, that really breaks authenticity right there.
Well, and it would need to be played by some sort of like strange lemur from a planet that, you know, obviously doesn't look like a real monkey, you know, so it has to be like some sort of Delta Quadrant lemur. So they again, they get it wrong. And it probably needs to wear a hat, too.
Or you could just take a kitty cat.
Yeah, there you go. Like a Delta Quadrant kitty cat. So, and they call it a monkey.
Yeah, I like the lemur option better, though. I think it would be more entertaining.
Well, I know you don't like cats, Chris.
Oh, man. Fake. But hey, do you think that fake Chakotay and fake Captain Janeway, they still have that same sexual tension?
I think so. I mean, I think he built her a fake bathtub.
I mean,
on the ship there.
If they're committing
a fake bathtub, does that hold fake water too, Chris?
Well, has it? It just doesn't look quite right, and it leaks.
It's a little askew. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not quite plumb. I mean, Chakotay is a fantastic carpenter, as we all know, obviously, because he's got that Native American in him. But this fake Chakotay, not so good. So,
yeah, okay. His bathtub leaks, and then Kathy, all of a sudden, the water's gone. Chakotay, could you get me the towel?
Yeah. Why have I got this funny rash?
Oh, God.
Oh, no, it's the space herpes.
That's what happens when you don't get real Chakotay to build your bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to go with the real thing.
Well, let's talk about what these people are doing in the first place, and the fact that they're damaging the reputation of Voyager, and the scene where Oryk, who is the leader or the head security guy, whatever, from this planet, where the fake Voyager crew has swindled them, comes up to the real Voyager, and they're there in the conference room, the observation lounge, and they're watching that video, and Janeway says, well, obviously that woman is not me, and he's just going to kind of go along with it, like, well, how do I know it's not you? And I love that Tuvok really calls him out on it. You know, how do we know that you're not fake? This is why you would be doing this to us. You're trying to swindle us out of some dilithium.
Well, and I'm sorry, if this ship has a view screen at all and they could have seen these ships at all, they'd realize that they're not exactly at all alike.
From the outside of the ship.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I mean, they took a sensor scan of that ship. They obviously know it's not Voyager.
Well, but the aliens are calling their ship the Delta Flyer.
Which is true. But you could just take them down to the...
Yeah, but it's not even a Delta Flyer, though.
Yeah, you just take them down to the cargo bay and be like, no, this is the Delta Flyer. See, it's even written on the side, Delta Flyer.
It's written on the side,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be right.
Yeah, I don't know. I found that very unconvincing that Oryk would be so convinced that he was dealing with the real Voyager when he got robbed. But then, I mean, he's named after a vacuum, so...
I don't think he was convinced. I think he was just going to stick with his story.
I mean, come on. Obviously, it's not the same. I mean, he just has to look at the real Janeway and the Janeway on that screen and be like, oh, she's got way better hair on that screen than you do today, because apparently your sonic shower was kaput. Yeah. So, I mean, geez.
Yeah.
Those are not the same women.
Hair wasn't in very good shape this week just because of the wig that fake Janeway Dala was wearing, so that she could say that line later. Nice hair.
Mm-hmm. I guess so, because Kathy really had bad hair in this episode.
It wasn't the greatest, no. She's done better.
Well, again, it's the sonic shower, and I was really disappointed that that whole scene where she shows up in engineering, she doesn't still have her bathrobe on, because obviously she didn't get to take a sonic shower, so she just put on clothes over that dirty body and like, fine, I'm not taking a shower, and that's why her hair looks like crap. It's all oily and stuff. We can tell, Kathy. I mean...
They should have, when she walks into engineering, there should be some people there working at stations, and they all just kind of turn.
Yeah, like, ooh, what's that smell?
Wow, what is... Yeah. Captain.
Yeah.
Captain's got some BO going today.
Yeah.
That, or she wouldn't say it out loud.
She put on the cologne, or you know, the perfume a little heavy that day. a little too much like lilac and a hint of moss. Oh,
I wonder if they've got Axe body spray in the future.
Probably. In fact, isn't Riker the president of Axe in the future?
Yes, yes.
I'm not just the president, I'm also a client.
Oh my gosh, if you put that on, it promises to give you the full Riker, you know, so
yeah, it contains pheromones.
Yeah, you're automatically 35% hotter to women, and genders of every species, so I mean,
right, but Tuvok would correct you, you know, 35.4% Matthew,
and to be exact. You can really get the lean in like he's got, you know, with the leg prop. It comes off perfectly if you're wearing just the right amount.
Mm.
Really? So Axe is important for the lean?
Well, if you're not Riker. I mean, you know, if you're really Riker, I mean, you don't even need the Axe body spray.
You need nothing.
Just secrete it. I mean, they're really just...
Maybe the Axe body spray has the essence of Riker.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
It.
They're just taking the essence of Riker from Riker, and that's what they're bottling and selling to people.
So this is what Beverly was doing on the Enterprise when she was not parenting Wesley and also not solving any medical problems. She was actually taking the essence of Riker, the secretion of Axe, and creating the concentrating it so that they could actually put it in.
She was formulating it, yeah.
And she was always trying to give it to John Luke so that he would hit on her, and it just never worked.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see, like, she's gotten Wesley to booby trap the door to the ready room so that when it slides open, there's a can of Axe there and it sprays across.
What the hell is that?
Down in his chair.
Number one!
He sits down in the chair at his desk, and when it sinks down a little bit, it triggers a can from under the desk to spray him.
That or then just she like shows a whoopee cushion up. He sits on, you know? And
yeah, then she shows up, you know, yeah. with some muffins or whatever, tea.
Some tea a and muffin, crumpets, maybe, you know? Exactly. Wow, she really knows how to butter him up.
Well, I like how we're talking about anything but Voyager at this point.
This has nothing to do with this episode at all.
Forget it. This is much more entertaining.
So, okay, to get us back, though, the idea of the ship going around and imitating somebody else, you know, obviously it can't happen in the Alpha Quadrant because you would know if you would run into a Starfleet ship.
Yeah.
So I did like, you know, that... It's important for any show to kind of do a show that you couldn't do on another series. And this is definitely, I give them props for at least creating an idea that you couldn't do on any other series, except for maybe when they do Enterprise, when nobody knows who, you know, Starfleet is. So I really did like that the premise of the episode is something that can't be done on a Deep Space Nine, or you know, mm-hmm. you're not going to. Well, I guess you could do it on Deep Space Nine because you could do it in the Gamma Quadrant. But yeah. Still, I mean, this is a great kernel of an idea for an episode. Now, whether it actually plays out and works is a completely different thing. But yeah. I think they should be given some serious props for thinking of an idea that works only on Voyager and that they can run with.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly, if anything, works best for Voyager than any of the other series. And I do like the fact that they took a chance and did this episode. It is a different idea. The execution, you could argue, well, I don't know. But it's kind of interesting that this hasn't actually happened before. You know what I mean?
Right. I would think someone would have done this already in the Delta Quadrant.
You think Sesko would have been all over this?
You know, I mean, they are traveling forward, you know, towards Earth the whole time, allegedly, and so they're leaving areas of space and never going back. So, for all we know, there could be other people back there doing this. But
right, yeah, so, who knows? The Kazon might be doing this now.
That's what I was just thinking. Although, I don't know, you know, they've got the whole hair; they've got hair issues themselves. So,
yeah,
that's Ooh, true. That would goodness. Be a dead giveaway.
So, okay, execution. I'm curious here because I just always take this episode as just sort of a fun story, and I don't really worry too much about the execution, although there is one thing in here that I think was done really poorly in the writing. But before I bring that up, I'm curious what you guys see as flaws in the execution. Matthew, you were the first one to question whether it was executed well.
I think for me is the problem that this is the sixth season and we're still doing throwaway episodes. You know, we know that this show is going to go to seven seasons and we don't have a ton of time left. And yet Voyager just can't figure out, even at this point, what the heck it wants to be. You know, and the fact that at this point, I would think you would be trying to build some sort of semblance of a massive, you know, storyline that would kind of continue to get you on through season seven. And then, you know, building all of that, you know, because you don't have a lot of time. And I guess I'd been spoiled because when season six of Deep Space Nine is ending, I mean, it's just massive. And it's creating this whole arc that's going to lead into the seventh season. And then they're going to lead us all the way through to the end. And I feel like Voyager could be kind of doing that same thing. But this episode, it's just like, if you'd never seen it, you'd never have a problem with being able to catch up next week on Voyager. And
but
that's a little disappointing.
I think this reflects a bit of some of the original premise of Voyager. And maybe that's part of the reason why they didn't really follow up with the Maquis storyline and such in the way that most of us fans wish they had. That they're telling stories that are a bit more like the original series. You know, you're in uncharted space, and so every week can be something new. And I think at this point, maybe that's kind of what the series still wants to be. Although they had fallen into the Borg thing, where there's this ongoing story where they keep encountering the Borg, but at the same time, there's still a feeling like they want to just keep doing these standalone individual stories. And so that's one reason why you get a story like this even in season six.
Yeah, I don't think a build up to a really long arc in the last season was what Voyager was ever intended to do. I mean, maybe we look back now and think, well, that would be a fantastic idea. Of course they should have done that. But at the time, that wasn't Voyager. It was week to week going from Strange New Worlds, and they stuck with the episodic formula the whole way through. I don't know if that's necessarily a fault of this episode alone, though. They wanted to do that. They wanted you to be able to tune into an episode and jump in at any point and be able to get into it and then watch another one. And then you don't have to necessarily watch from the very beginning to understand all that's going on, because, well, reruns, syndication, that's what it was designed to do, for better or for worse. That's just the way it was. That was the fact.
I do feel like they started out wanting a return to the original series format very much, and since DS9 was running at the same time, they maybe didn't want to have two Star Trek series going at the same time, which were both getting into these heavily serialized arcs. And so this was sort of the counterbalance to DS9.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah,
I mean, then that way, fans who really liked the episodic nature of TNG, they could have Voyager, and then those who were into DS9, they got what they wanted out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other thing that really struck me, too, was realizing that this was a six-season episode and that everything on Voyager looks exactly the same as it did in season one. Like, nothing's changed, you know, except for Kathy's hair.
Yeah, and don't forget that it's been destroyed. The inside of the ship's been destroyed over and over, and yet it still looks exactly the same, right?
And what was funny about the episode, too, because there are some great little things in there, like the idea that Neelix has taken this you know, power source thing for his cooking unit, and that's what creates the problems. You're like, those are all amazing, brilliant ideas, because these are the things that would be happening for real in the Delta Quadrant, of them trying to, you know, sustain themselves. And like, there's little nuggets of that every once in a while. You get that. It's like really smart. And yet again, it's just something I'm missing. And whether or not the execution of this episode comes out is that, for me, I'm just like, it was semi amusing, the storyline, but that was kind of like the end of it, because I wasn't left with anything other than that was semi amusing, and now I can go on with the rest of my day, and it'll never impact my thoughts on Voyager as a whole series like this episode. And so that's, I don't know, like, to me that just doesn't resonate. I don't know, Char, what did you think of the way this episode is like actually executed?
Well, I think, like, unfortunately, like a lot of Voyager episodes do, it takes a really interesting idea and just doesn't really exploit it to its fullest potential. Because this is a great idea, but watching it happen, I have to agree with you, it is not a standout episode. Like, when I think of episodes that I really enjoy, even though this is, you could say, a more humorous episode than anything, when I think of funny episodes, this one doesn't really come up. It's not a favorite. I feel like it's very mediocre. It has some really good things to it. It's got some great elements. But yeah, it's not the most memorable thing. And it just, I don't know, it's not that great. Like, at the end of it, the more I watch it, the more I just kind of think, okay, next.
So the theme of Voyager is, it could have been better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. When I first watched this episode, I really liked it, but then watching it more and more, the more times I've watched it, the less I've liked it. And you could say that actually for a lot of the episodes. You could say that for a lot of, I would say, season 4 through 7 that are, you know, on a first glance, they present some interesting stuff and they're good to watch. But then if you really start to examine them and you pick them apart, it's just, oh. It's not that great.
Well, let me tell you the part that I felt was handled poorly in the writing, and certainly could have been done better, and see if you agree. And this is the section of Doctor in Drag, where the Doctor is impersonating the fake Captain Janeway as a hologram. And the idea is interesting. But the way that they actually get from the idea whenever it came up to the actual reveal, and of course you figure out immediately when the fake Captain Janeway, you can tell she's a hologram at that point, then you immediately know that, okay, well, it's the Doctor, because he was on the Delta Flyer with Tom, you know, when they arrived there. But you see Neelix doing his counseling session in the brig, and then you see Dala, fake Captain Janeway, escape, steal the Delta Flyer, and then next thing you know, she's coming on to her own ship and leading them down to the planet, and then we find out, well, that's not really her, it's the Doctor. And then we cut back up to Tom having her on some kind of bio bed with her wig off. and telling her, you know, you're going to need a little longer to wake up. Just the whole execution of coming up with the plan and setting it into motion and then the reveal felt very clunky to me.
It was. It was really choppy, sloppily done. I think on first viewing, I was not even entirely sure what was going on. It took me a split second to figure, oh, okay, this is what they're doing. That shouldn't have happened. Should have been a lot cleaner than that.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that I struggle with just for me and honestly with Voyager and you both were kind of talking about is always the execution, but also the rewatch value of the show. Like, do I get more out of watching more Voyager? And for me, just personally, and this just doesn't reflect on anybody else's opinion of the show, I just don't. I don't get more depth, you know, and that's what I enjoy about watching, you know, even the original series or you know, Deep Space Nine or Enterprise or, you know, TNG. I do feel like I can get more out of the show by watching more of it and rewatching episodes. But, you know, when I come to a rewatch of an episode of Voyager, on a whole, there are less episodes where I feel better for having have watched it again, you know, and there are a few that we've talked about. I think even, you know, Char, on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
We were talking about some of the ones that we've done together, like 1159 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, those are some of those episodes where you really do get more by watching that episode over and over. And mm-hmm. that's the disappointment for me because I love all of Star Trek from, you know, the original series to the JJ verse. There's always something for me to get out of it. I just wished that Voyager had more of that. So I wanted to go back to it more.
Well, it comes down to the writing staff and what they are themselves trying to put into the stories and get out of the practice of storytelling, I think. And you just see a stark difference between this staff and some of the others, especially the DS9 staff.
Yeah, well, a lot of the Voyager writers had been so incredibly burnt out by the time, especially when we get to latter Voyager.
Yeah.
They just written so much. They were so exhausted. And you could tell that they were phoning it in from week to week. There just wasn't anything left there.
Well, and it's not because the idea and the premise isn't good. You know, I think that was the thing about it is that Voyager is rich with potential. And the mm-hmm. again, I think it was the aspect of the studio really hampering that ability because writers will get excited if they have something to write for. And when you give it an episodic nature, you don't have anything to write for. You know, whereas when you look at what happened on Deep Space Nine and
building
an Enterprise, you know, they have more ability to have something to write for and move towards. And you give writers that opportunity to really dig into characters, man, they're gonna love that. And they're not gonna be phoning it in. So I think that's where the change.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's an interesting comparison because you've got Brannon Braga writing on Voyager, you've got Brandon Braga writing on Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can actually compare.
And both were on UPN.
Yep.
Well, and you had Brandon Braga writing on TNG as well, so you can see some of the stories that he did there as well. So you do see just from series to series a difference in the stories that he himself is telling.
Yep, definitely.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So one other thing here with the Doctor and the whole escape. And now I'm just trying to think in my head, like, who are we seeing fly the Delta Flyer out of Voyager? Because when they go and they get the Delta Flyer, the fake Janeway, and then we cut to the bridge, you can tell, and this is where sort of the poor execution or the poor presentation of the plan comes through in the episode, you can tell that Janeway knew that the Delta Flyer was going to be stolen at that point. So then you know, well, she's got some kind of plan formulated. But we see Dala, the fake Janeway, piloting the Delta Flyer. But as is so often the case in Star Trek, you've got an alien sitting down at a Starfleet control panel, knowing exactly which buttons to tap without studying it at all and just flying away. And then it makes you wonder, well, was that the Doctor as fake Janeway as a hologram doing that, which I don't think is the case because we see the Doctor later as himself when they arrive at the imposter ship. So that's just weird. But you see that all the time in Star Trek. And, right. and in reverse, too, you know, our heroes go to alien planets and know immediately how to work control panels as well.
Yeah, apparently they are just all universal and we could figure them out in no time at all.
Yeah,
well, yeah, it's one of those things that I guess we just have to forgive. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, they don't have time to study it in a 45-minute show. But nevertheless, in this particular case, it really stood out to me because, okay, even if they downloaded the records from Voyager when they were given the blessing, right. the blessing which lasted, Tom said, I don't know, a couple of minutes. I'm like, that's a long blessing right there.
It really is.
Even if they had that information, that's not the same thing as actually ever having touched the real control panel. So it was kind of
right. It's the difference between like doing your driver's test and actually driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, they probably had built a fake simulator, you know, so they would understand how to work Starfleet technology, Chris. They, with their fake holodeck. And yeah. it had
with
given them
probably
the ability
the
to practice.
The panels had comically oversized buttons.
Yes. Like really that, big, yeah. right. jeweled-like buttons like the original series. Yeah. They hadn't quite gotten it right.
yeah.
So
you think she would have had tons of typos operating that panel
probably,
because
yeah.
they're much more closer together.
You would think, yeah.
You'd think, yeah. I feel like the one redeeming thing that I get out of this episode is that, I don't know, it's kind of twofold. I love the scene where Neelix is talking to Dala, fake Janeway, about what Starfleet stands for, and it's about integrity and honesty, and living with Captain Janeway and the crew on Voyager has turned him into a much more honest and trusting and better person,
mm-hmm.
which I think we can all relate to because we want to live in that future, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why we, as an audience, like Star Trek, because it gives us hope for a better future. But then, you know, they kind of want to present it to us as, oh, well, you know, the alien of the week, she's a villain. And is she going to see the light or isn't she? I do like the fact that she doesn't see the light. She's not going to just, oh, well, is that all I have to do to have a good life? Well, that's great. I'm on board. Sign me up. I'm glad they didn't go that route. But at the same time, Dala is such a standard cookie cutter villain. It's almost like this episode is making fun of itself with the I can't believe we fell for nuns line. And then in that year, they're suckering us into watching yet another enemy of the week who experiences no growth and has no real impact on anything when it comes to the bottom line. So in a way, it's unsatisfying. And yet there is some good commentary there. What do you guys think about that?
So you're wanting her to have her come to Jesus moment? Be real or
not necessarily.
Like, that is a hard thing because like, I think I was doing the same thing. Okay, if she really comes around, like this episode is stupid. But then if she doesn't come around,
right.
So they really shot them in the foot because there's no good answer to this episode.
Right. Because yeah.
That's just
if,
it.
If
yeah.
Neelix got through to her and she came around, like you said, and then, oh, would Janeway really do that for me? She let me stay on the ship, then you would feel like, wow, this is like the cheesiest story ever, right?
Right. So, like, they can't do that because that's just not realistic. But I feel like that's been done so many times on Star Trek before.
Yeah.
That we would almost buy it. And so it's almost like, ha, sucker.
But I do like that scene, as you said, Char, for what Neelix says and what it reveals about him. Because here we are in season 6, and you are seeing into Neelix and how he's changed and what Janeway and the crew have meant to him and have helped him become a better person and have a better life. And so that part, I think it was nice that was revealed and that it was him revealing it. But within the setting of it, you're also feeling like, okay, Neelix, the captain said bread and water. Okay, she had a reason for this. Now, you made this whole meal, and you're going to go in, and you're going to not only be in the brig, but you're going to leave the force field down as well the whole time while you sit in there and try to counsel the prisoner.
Yeah, well, and have you not opened your mouth enough already?
Right, and you got us into this in the first place by talking to this exact same woman.
Right. I guess Neelix didn't learn anything in this episode.
That's the thing that is unclear and not so well done in the episode, is the fact that that seems to be the plan all along after you get, you know, out of it and you realize that they have this other plan set up. But it just doesn't come together. You know, like you said, Chris, the kind of resolution and everything with the doctor and with Tom being there and all of that, it's like there has to be a better way to have put this all together so it seems more cohesive and just better thought out. So that was the part where it was like, okay, well, Neelix seems to be there on purpose because the point is maybe they can get her to think, but at the same time, Janeway's hedging all of her bets that this woman is going to just attack him and get out, because then, you know, they're planning for that contingency with the doctor and Tom. And so, but it's so maddeningly frustrating because I think it just doesn't congeal.
That is the thing, like, after the fact, you feel like, okay, yeah, Janeway sent him there so that she could escape, and then she's going to go steal the Delta Flyer. But it's a real stretch, right? It's like, okay, well, she's going to escape, and then she's going to go and steal the Delta Flyer, and so we're going to have Tom and the Doctor on the Delta Flyer already. It's a lot of pieces that have to fall into place. But Neelix having his counseling moment, I have to think, was not part of the original plan. If it were part of the original plan, then that's just bizarre, and I don't know what Janeway, she's got like some kind of,
that's way too calculating.
Janeway's already got a bad hair day today, so all bets are off.
I mean, I bet they only had decaf anywhere right now as well.
Replicators had gone down, so she didn't get her coffee today. So she's got a bad hair day. Yeah. No coffee. People gonna pay.
It's no wonder she didn't fly off the handle here.
Okay, speaking of the trend, saying the replicator is going to go down, this is another thing that does bother me with the writing, and it's very common. It seems to be more common on Voyager than on other Star Trek series. At the end, when the fake Delta Flyer is going to get away, so Voyager attacks the alien ship to cut off their tractor beam. And again, that alien ship, you see Voyager in battles with the Borg and with the Hirogen, people like this, and they're holding their own in these fights. And here's this one alien ship, and every shot is draining roughly 20 to 30% of their shields. That's kind of a stretch in the first place. And then they cut off that tractor beam, and the fake Delta Flyer is going to leave, and then Janeway is telling them to lock on to that ship. One shot comes, and then Seven says, that last shot disabled the transporters. Oh, Janeway had told her, you know, lock on to those. So first, a shot disables the tractor beam. Then Janeway says, lock on to all the life signs and beam them over. And then another shot comes in. And of course, Seven says, well, that shot disabled the transporters. I'm like, okay, really?
Well, I mean, so, of course. They didn't lose how a shuttle this episode. So at least there's that, you know.
Chakotay wasn't piloting.
Yeah,
that's
and
why.
Nobody had to fire a photon torpedo that may or may not actually be able to exist because we've extinguished the supply of them. So
I don't know, Matthew. After we record, let's go watch that YouTube video. We'll
and
find
count,
out.
Yeah,
if it
exactly.
exists or what kind of fancy torpedo it is that they've created. So. All right. Well, I guess this is the episode. So, final thoughts and ratings on the episode, Matthew. How about you?
Wow. Well, we didn't really talk too much about the episode, so I hope that doesn't bother anyone. you know, this the problem with the episode is that by the end of it, I don't really remember much of what happened because nothing of consequence actually happens, and I'm as Char said, the more I watch it, the less I care about this one. You know, that's the unfortunate nature of this episode itself. I give it, you know, probably, oh man, a fourth of a can of Riker Axe Spray, because that's about, I can't even give it a whole can.
Man.
Because a whole can of Riker Axe Spray would be like, you know, we were talking about, you know, one of the fantastic episodes of Voyager, like 1159 or something.
Yeah, wow.
A full can of Riker Axe Spray would be the equivalent of like a weekend or like a week of passion on Ryza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you can still do a lot with a quarter can.
You can, but, I was being kind. So, but yeah, it's just it's just one of those places where I'm disappointed. Like you said, we've just kind of picked apart a lot of places that this episode kind of falls apart or hasn't thought a lot of things through. And that's just the unfortunate nature of some Voyager episodes, and this just happened to be one of them. So, that's not all Voyager episodes, because there's some really great ones that I will go back and watch just because I enjoy them. So this just doesn't happen to be the episode that I would normally just sit down and think, Voyager episode, which one do I need to watch?
Okay. Even though it does have your favorite Hot Vorta in it.
That's true. But this episode was not directed by Jeremy Lin, I found out. So I'm a little disappointed. I'm just not as excited about Star Trek 3 now.
All right. Well, how about you, Char?
Well, I have to agree on a lot of things that you said, Matthew. It's really, by and large, fairly unsatisfying. It's sort of like having a candy bar for your lunch, you know? It might give you a little bit of a rush, and it'll do the trick for a little while, but it's largely unsatisfying, if that makes any sense. It's a really weird... This is like a Bones analogy. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Whatever.
I was just thinking, like, maybe that's like Chakotay in the sack? I don't know. Mostly unsatisfying?
Oh.
Don't tell Suzanne that.
Yeah, Suzanne is going to be sending some hate mail your way, Matthew.
Yeah, you are responsible for that one, mister.
Boy, I have a feeling, Matthew, that the next 602 Club is not going to be posted to Facebook.
Yeah, you're That's screwed, true. Buddy. That's you're on true. Your own there.
I mean, slimy?
No, you know
satisfying.
What it is? It's not Chakotay in the sack. It's Chakotay in Seven in the sack. That is really unsatisfying.
Yeah.
See? There.
I don't even want to think about that. I mean, Seven, yes. Chakotay, no.
The two of them together, no.
It's like, it's not even oil and water.
It just never should have happened. It's stricken from my personal canon, and I suggest you do the same.
Thank you.
So, anyway, on first viewing, not too bad. It's an entertaining hour of Voyager, and I can move on with my life. But like I said earlier, the more I watch it, the less satisfying it is, the less I get out of it. It's not one of those where it's got so many complex layers to it that I need to watch it several times to really understand the scope of it and really get some good stuff out of it. It's just, it's not there. It doesn't have that substance. So it's very mediocre, and I'm going to give it 3 wigs.
Wow, 3 wigs. Very nice. All right. Well, yeah, I agree with what you guys have said. I still think it's a fun episode. But the areas that we really focused on today and some of the weaknesses, and also what I noticed more this time than in the past, the way that the resolution is handled and the whole plan of the Doctor in drag was, a little bit weak for me as well. But I still like to watch this one from time to time. So I'm going to give this one 6 improvised Vulcan lies.
Nice.
Which unfortunately is something we didn't talk about in the episode today. I did like that scene where Janeway puts Tuvok on the spot and he has to come up with some lies. It's something like you might see Kirk and Spock do. And it also reminded me of the scene with Archer and T'Pol, where they're having to play good cop, bad cop. And similar to Tuvok here, T'Pol is making up all this stuff about punishments for crimes.
Well, there's nothing worse than a bad case of psoriasis, so...
I know.
Tell you what, man.
Which I think happens if you use too much Riker Axe.
I think that is a side effect.
Side effects may
side
include.
Side effects may include.
All right. So, Matthew, thanks for joining us today. Tell everyone where they can find you around the interwebs and the network.
Well, of course, you guys can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. So if you do want to dig in with some Deep Space Nine or just understand the show a little bit better or come to love it the way that we do, because that's our goal, is really to get people to love Deep Space Nine the way we do, then join us there. You can also find me on Literary Treks, talking about the books and comics of Star Trek. If you want to find some great Voyager, please join us there, because I actually do love the Voyager books, and we've got great interviews with Kirsten Beyer. You know, if you want to know the potential of Voyager and how great it could have been, you need to be reading Kirsten Beyer's books and listening to her interviews on Literary Trek. So you can find Dan and I there doing that. And you can also find me on the 602 Club, where we talk about all things geeky. We just pick a new topic every week and talk about that for the week. So whether we're talking Galaxy Quest or Star Wars or Indiana Jones or something like that, it's a great place just basically to geek out with us. And then lastly, you can find me on my own personal blog. I just do a lot of things like reviews of books or movies or things like that, or just write articles about things that are important to me. That's it. 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again, Matthew.
Well, Chris, that was a lot of fun talking with Matthew about Live Fast and Prosper. I think this is more of a fan favorite than we give it credit for in our analysis of the episode.
Yeah.
I think people enjoy it just because it is a funner, more lighthearted, funnier episode. But hey, you know what? Everybody's mileage varies a little bit, and it was kind of fun picking it apart a little bit.
Well, I mean, that's what we're having a discussion, right? So we can't
right,
just
get that's on what we do here on the Ready
say,
Room.
Yeah, it's great. It's all fine. It's all 100% fine. Now, it's interesting because when you've watched these things so many times like this, what is interesting is to dig deeper into it and try to figure out what works and what doesn't for you. So, yeah, I think it was a great discussion. Now, one thing we did not talk about, unfortunately, was Jeffrey Combs' role in this episode.
Yeah, this was groundbreaking material, and I really think he should have been nominated for all of the awards as Dalla's Wig.
Yeah, you know, I thought that might be him, but it was really hard to recognize him. But he's such a versatile actor, you really never know what role he's playing in an episode.
He is everywhere.
Well, that's just it. I mean, the true talent of an actor is to transcend acting and lose himself in the part. I feel like he did this in this role.
I think he really did. I mean, you could tell that he really believed he was the wig.
Yeah, I mean, there was no Jeffrey Combs there at all.
Definitely not. All right, well, I'm glad Matthew could join us as well, but this isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on the network, so here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain.
Is it our birthday?
It is. It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they that shake happened. Hands and go, hey, it's been fun, it's been nice, thanks for the picnic.
Yeah, see ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
At this point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine, both franchises are dead, let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well-thought-out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct, because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, yeah, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie, is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what else we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spreaker, TuneIn, Windows Phone. You can find us on BlackBerry. You can go to the website, stream from the show page there. You can download the MP3 file. And also you can find us on Stitcher. And speaking of Stitcher and iTunes, if you're in either one of those places, please take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review. We'd love to hear what you think about the show, and those ratings also help us rise up in the search results so that other Star Trek fans can find the Ready Room as they're searching for Star Trek podcasts. Now, if you'd like to share your thoughts with us, there are many ways for you to get in touch with us. You can send us a message by going to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail at speakpipe.com/trekfm, and you'll see a little tool for that in the left sidebar on the website also. And of course, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm. On Twitter, our username is trekfm. And going back to Facebook, come join us in the Babel Conference. This is a closed group. It's a discussion group for our listeners, a replacement for the forums that we used to have on the website. We have hundreds of members in the group now. We have great discussions every single day, and I'm very proud to say that the discussions have remained excellent. It's not one of those online groups where people just fight with each other about details, you know, about Star Trek or whatever the topic may be. It's a really great, really interesting group. And the way you get there is to either go to our website and click discussion up on the menu bar, or on Facebook, type Babel into the search field, B-A-B-E-L, and you'll see the Babel Conference come right up. Click join and we'll let you into the group, and I hope that we'll see you over there. Now, Shar, if people want to get in touch with you and find out what else you're doing on the network, and also, you know, find out how your hair is doing when your sonic shower isn't working, where can they find you?
Well, fortunately, I got my sonic shower fixed, and so I don't have a greasy head going right now, fortunately. You can find me elsewhere on the network on To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Woo-hoo. Which is our... Oh, I like that. We ought to add that. Woohoo! Yeah.
Very
that
subtle.
Is our, yeah. That's our weekly Voyager podcast where Tristan Riddell and I talk all things Voyager. And so if you like this show, give us a try there if you haven't, because if you like Voyager, that's the place to do it. We give Voyager an honest but very loving look.
Yeah, and not only that, Char, but as a number of your reviews on iTunes say, people will say, I don't even like Voyager, but I love listening to Do the Journey.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's one of the biggest compliments you could possibly give us. Even if you don't like Voyager much as a show and you like our podcast, man, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That means we're doing something right. And that's very gratifying. And so, yes, give us a listen if you haven't done that already. And if you do listen to us and haven't given us a review on iTunes, please do that as well. That helps us out a lot.
I think you guys have the most reviews of any Trek FM show, other than Mission Log. I think you guys have the most reviews. Yeah.
Yes. We are sadly quite behind Mission Log, but if we've got to come in second place to anybody, it might as well be Mission Log because they're super awesome.
And what about Twitter, if people want to find you on there?
Oh, yes, of course. I am on the Twitter, and my handle is OTheProfanity.
And I have to say, too, people can find you in the Babel Conference, and you don't really carry over the profanity spirit as much on there. You're very well behaved as you are here on the podcasts.
That's because I'm not on Facebook nearly as much as I am on Twitter.
All right. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me here on the network on just two shows these days, this one and The Orb with Matthew. If you go back to older episodes prior to the end of November of last year, you'll find me also on Warp 5 and Literary Treks, that one with Matthew. Also the Axanar podcast and Continuing Mission and Hyper Channel and all kinds of different shows. But I have cut back here now, focusing on the Ready Room and the Orb as my schedule continues to be quite crazy with my new job. But we're going to try to get the Ready Room stabilized here and keep the show coming out to you. And then you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, a letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can also find me on Facebook there in the Babel Conference. So come over there and talk Star Trek with me on Facebook. We'd also like to take a moment to thank our associate producer here on the Ready Room, Renee Roberts, who you can find on Twitter at @Mares_1701. Renee does a great job of helping us keep the show coming to you every week, has been a huge supporter of the network all the way from the beginning, going back 4 years now, as I've been building this from when it was just me originally, and now we have all these shows and this wonderful crew. So we really thank Renee for her support. You can also support the show, if you would like, by going to patreon.com/trekfm and setting an amount that you would like to contribute on a month-to-month basis. Every little bit helps. Every dollar helps. We are a listener-supported network, and without your help, we won't be able to keep the shows coming to you every week. So we hope that you will join Renee and the many, many others who support us there on Patreon. And there's even an option there for you to become an associate producer as well. So go check that out. Patreon.com/TrekaFilm. And we really, really thank everyone for your support. All right, Char. Well, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to run back down to the mess hall and see if I can get Neelix to teach me the tricks to that shell game so I can hustle people on my next visit to San Francisco. You know, I'm going to set up there in the BART station.
Well, I'd make sure that he's up to spec, because he might have lost his edge a little bit, even though he's had a little bit of practice lately.
Yeah, he's a little soft, but yeah.
Yeah, make sure the doctor's around. He'll be there to give some extra pointers.
You got to get up really early to fool his ocular subroutines.
That's right. Well, I think it's time to stick an oversized tattoo in it, because the ready room is done.
Recording.
Recording.
My microphone still works.
Hey, it's all the right. Ready room. Are you wearing pants? We don't know. It's been so long.
It'd be funny if we found out that Picard never wore pants in the ready room.
The things Livingston saw.
Oh, my.
Oh, my indeed.
Every time someone comes in, if it's not Beverly, then he has to quickly pull on his pants.
Yeah, he's fidgeting underneath his desk. And then if it is Beverly, all bets are off.
That's right.